May God bless this assembly again this evening and greet you in our Master's name, the one that has all the answers to the problems of our world, and the one who has given us work to do and who has promised that he will go with us even unto the end of the world. All power is given unto me in heaven and earth, Jesus said, and he gives that power to us as we need it. And it will be there, and I like the thoughts of our brother during the devotional there, that idea that God's word doesn't change, and Jesus doesn't change, and his power is limitless. His grace is all-sufficient. And regardless of the place we live on the planet, God is still God. And thank God that the word doesn't change. It seems like there's a lot of loved ones and friends of ours that think that something did change somehow. And that's not our subject tonight, but there are things that we're going to talk about tonight that do influence our thinking and do tend to wear our mentality in a certain direction or tilt it in a certain direction. And to me, these things are, at least we need to think about them. The title that I have tonight is The Effects of Technology and Materialism on Our Family Life. The Effects of Technology and Materialism on Our Family Life. In this morning's message, I said that there's probably going to be some overlap with what we have this evening, and I think that it will be that way. You'll probably detect that here or there. But it is a sequel to what we had this morning. And we'll probably draw some excerpts from the book and some other resources. And this book that I have here is not the book, but I want to do some reading out of the book or refer to some verses from it before we get into some practical teaching here on this subject of the effects of technology and materialism on our family life. Let's just remember something. True it is that the God of this world hath blinded the minds of them that believe not, lest the light of the glorious gospel of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine unto them. And when I think about how this may have been 100 years ago, I'm not altogether sure what that looked like then. But I've been hearing people talking, even in recent past, and even as recent as Friday night at mission meeting. One of the brothers who was sharing up front or preaching up front said that when you go anymore to even as much as ride on a plane, it used to be that was visiting time. But now the screens, if you're flying Delta flight, the screen is right there on your seat and you can do anything with that screen that you want to do with it. And most of the time they pass out earbuds to the passengers in the plane and you can entertain yourself just there. And how many people do you see walking down the street totally in another channel because the buds are hanging from their ears in some way or another or some form or another? They're totally in another world. Impossible to communicate. And then you try to walk up to somebody, maybe even ask where something is, or if you're like in a new place, you don't know quite where something is. Hey, what did you say? Oh, Papa's here, but what did you say again? As if, you know, and in the rest of the time, it's another channel. And maybe we get close to that sometimes ourselves now and then. The God of this world has a plan for the world. And although it is under the control of a higher power, that is Almighty God, things are marching rapidly to an end. And as I said this morning, we can expect that what the Bible says about the last days and how people will be in the last days is exactly the way it's going to be. In such a time as this, however, the people of God need to be wise as serpents and harmless as doves and live as sheep in the midst of wolves. You know, back in the days of Rome, they had a Colosseum there. And as time progressed, the people wanted bread and circuses. They wanted bread, free bread from the government, and entertainment. And a lot of that entertainment brought thousands and thousands of people to the Colosseum. And the early church knew what the Colosseum meant. It meant death for a lot of their members. To the wild beasts, to the gladiators, and defenseless Christians were killed and killed and killed in the Colosseum. There was other kinds of fights that went on there, but it was entertainment. And if it was that way then, what prevents it from happening now is one of the questions that I have. What prevents it from happening now? I mean, if you read Voice of the Martyrs, you don't read very long until you find the very stunning reality that this is the life in some parts of the world even now. In fact, there's more persecution across the world now than probably ever has been. We as parents and grandparents today and teachers and whoever is relating to the next generation, we need to have something solid and stable in our lives. And thank God his word didn't change. And thank God that his standard still remains the same. And we better be hanging on to it. We better have a good acquaintance with what the good old book says. We better have a pretty firm grip on it. Because the waves of alternative voices, the ways of an easier yet Christian way, and here again it's not my topic, but think about it. The reason that so many of our loved ones and friends feel free to discard Bible practices and become obedient to Christ because of, and they'll blame it on just about anything, an abusive home situation, or they'll blame it on mistreatment from somebody that shouldn't have mistreated them, or some root of bitterness that sprang up and troubled, and many were defiled. They'll blame it on anything. But I can't think of a good reason yet where some experience that's been bad in my history, I can't think of a good reason yet why it gives me a license to disobey the commands of Christ. I haven't found it yet. Because at the end of the day, Jesus says, the words that I have spoken unto you will judge you in the last day, and not because of what somebody did to you way back there. Let's look at the word here tonight, Titus chapter 2. When we think about the effect of technology and materialism on our family life, let's think about what we read here. But speak thou the things which become sound doctrine. And you might have whatever interpretation you have of that, but I like to think about theory that becomes practical practice. Doctrine that gets put into day-by-day living. Teaching that is practiced. Someone has said it this way, the practical effect of a belief is the real test of its soundness. We can theorize all day long about concepts and ideals, but what is actually happening in my life and yours is really the test of what we believe or if we don't believe it. And I know this takes development in our youth, in our adolescents, to give their hearts to Christ. It takes work. It's not just once and done thing. It doesn't happen just because we want it to. It takes discipline. It takes self-denial some days, maybe a lot of days. Okay, speak thou the things which become sound doctrine, that the aged men be sober, grave, temperate, sound in faith, in charity, in patience, that the aged women likewise, that they be in behavior as becometh holiness, not false accusers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things. So if you're an older lady here this evening, you have a teaching job. It says at the last phrase of verse 3. Example job first, and then a teaching job, that they may teach, verse 4, the younger women to be sober, to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, keepers at home, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God be not blasphemed. Young men likewise exhort to be sober-minded, in all things showing thyself a pattern of good works, in doctrine showing uncorruptness, gravity, sincerity, sound speech that cannot be condemned, that he that is of the contrary part may be ashamed, having no evil thing to say of you. And young men this evening, If you're a pattern of good works, your family knows it, your coworkers know it, and it's just a standard to live to. Just be what those verses say. In word and action, sincerity. Sincerity. What's sincerity? If you know anything of the Spanish language, it's actually a word pulled from Latin, which means without wax. Sincera is the Spanish word. Sin meaning without, and cera meaning wax. So you probably have heard this maybe multitudes of times. But what happens is whenever you build something out of pottery, we happen to have a relative that's involved in that little hobby. Maybe I almost could say a business, but they have a hobby of making pottery. But whenever you have some little hairline crack in the pottery, what old timers have done still is they've taken a kind of wax and covered it over, and you can paint it or do something to cover it up. But if you ever fire it, the crack will be very, very obvious. Why? Because it has wax in it. You smear the crack over with wax, but if you fire it and make it the way pottery is supposed to be really made, the wax will run away. And are we a Christian with wax in the cracks, as it were? With wax glazing over our faults and our issues? Or are we real? How is it in our lives? A lot could be said about that. Sincerity, sound speech. A lot can be said about a Christian by the words that he says. Jesus teaches us that in Matthew chapter 12, I think, and also in the book of James chapter 3 and other places for sure. Sound speech that cannot be condemned, that he that is of the contrary part may be ashamed, having no evil thing to say of you. Because if our testimony as the people of God is what Jesus says here, they might not like us because of what we believe. They might not like us because of our practice, but they will have no evil thing to say. In other words, any accusation should fall ungrounded. And that's a lofty ideal because we all make mistakes, even so. At least this fellow does. Exhort servants to be obedient unto their own masters and to please them well in all things, not answering again, not purloining, but showing all good fidelity, that they may adorn the doctrine of God, our Savior, in all things. So if you're an employee, it gives some exhortation here. And it's all for a good reason. For the grace of God that bringeth salvation has appeared unto all men, teaching us that denying ungodliness and worldly lusts, we should live soberly, righteously, and godly in this present world, looking for that blessed hope and the glorious appearing of the great God and our Savior Jesus Christ, who gave himself for us, that he might redeem us from all iniquity and purify unto himself a peculiar people, zealous of good works. These things speak and exhort and rebuke with all authority. Let no man despise thee. I didn't call too much attention to verses 4 and 5, and that refers more to the younger ladies. But maybe we'll go on with our next passage right now, Romans chapter 1. Thinking a little bit about conditions in the world we live in. And even in Apostle Paul's time, he wrote these things, and these things are ever so true today. Romans chapter 1 and verse 28. And when we see here, if you read the prior part to this, you read a lot of what is actually happening in our world right now. They don't want to have God in their knowledge. They want to keep God out of the picture. Many are turning to atheism. At least they think they are. But it's a little bit like happened in years ago when a Christian girl was in an ungodly school, and maybe I should add a communistic school, and the teacher was trying to prove that there is no God. And somehow in the course of conversation and the teacher said, let's shake our fists at God. And the Christian girl in the class, she was obligated to be there, She couldn't be anywhere else. She had to be in school that day, and she didn't do it. And the teacher said, "Why didn't you shake your fist at God?" Well, she said, if there is no God, why would we have to shake our fist at him, okay? Pretty bright scholar, huh? Pretty bright scholar. They don't want to have God in their knowledge. Change the truth of God into a lie and worshiped and served the creature more than the creator. There's plenty of human body worship in our world, and I don't need to go into any detail. You know what I mean. The gymnasiums, the Planet Fitness, it's all for one reason. The movie industry is built around it. For this cause, God gave them up unto vile affections. And there's pretty graphic language in 26 and 27 about what happens, and we could read it because it's in the Bible, but I want to start in 28 now. Even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, they didn't like it. That's why they stopped doing it. They did not want to retain God in their knowledge. God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient, being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers. Remember them that I talked about this morning that say, till death do us part, and then turn right around and divorce? Like that one Kardashian girl, I think she spent like $2 or $3 million for her wedding and was divorced in about 7 weeks afterwards. And now she's gone with at least a third man since, if I remember correctly. Covenants don't mean anything. Promises don't mean anything. And that girl in that reading I read to you this morning, why do so many lie when you say till death do us part? And we know, we've seen, we understand that in our world. Without natural affection. And that's why anymore it's so common to see people walking the dogs up and down the road and not their children. You see what I'm saying? You ever observe that anywhere? Running with the dog. A man that I know very well was in taking some schooling, and he walked up to a young lady, a fine person in society. He said, "I've got a question for you. If you had a man in your life that could make all the money that you need and all that you could ever wish for, would you like that or your dog?" She said, "I want my dog." He said, "Do you understand my question?" And he reiterated, he reworded it. "A man that cares for you and loves you and whatever. You want that or your dog?" She said, "I want my dog." Without natural affection. Implacable, unmerciful. Who knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. And you know what? Just depending what you and I are doing with this little apparatus right here, just depending what we do. And this in here I actually got, what was it, about 3 months ago, my first one. I fought a long time to just use somebody else's or use my iPad or use a computer at the shop, but when my other one failed, I guess I decided to do this now. And it's been a challenge. But depending what you do with this, you can have pleasure in somebody else's sin. Oh, you'd never do what they're doing. Uh-uh. But it gives you a little pleasure if you see it. Just depending what you're doing with that thing right there. Is that somebody you? Psalm 101. I noticed a brother picked 102 this evening. I kind of caught my curiosity where he was going to go next because I was thinking Psalm 101. Psalm 101, in modern terms, has been categorized as something relating to Christian viewing habits. So you want to use a standard by which to judge what you look at and what you use your devices for and the screens time that you have. Psalm 101 was written eons before it was ever invented or came around. But the person that wrote it knew something about improper viewing habits. I think we can understand that. You see who wrote it. He knew where improper viewing habits will take you and what it costs. He'd been there, done that. And so he teaches us some things. Psalm 101, verse 1. I will sing of mercy and judgment. Unto thee, O Lord, will I sing. I will behave myself wisely in a perfect way. O, when wilt thou come unto me? I will walk within my house in a perfect heart. I will set no wicked thing before mine eyes. I hate the work of them that turn aside. It shall not cleave to me. A froward heart shall depart from me. I will not know a wicked person. Who privately slandereth his neighbor, him will I cut off. He that hath a high look and a proud heart will I not suffer. Verse 6, mine eyes shall be upon the faithful of the land, that they may dwell with me. He that walketh in a perfect way, he shall serve me. He that worketh deceit shall not dwell within my house. He that telleth lies shall not tarry in my sight. I will early destroy all the wicked of the land, that I may cut off all wicked doers from the city of the Lord. Now, I know that there's some Old Testament language in there. I realize that. I understand that. But there's more than one way to cut off the wicked doers from our homes. One of those ways is very practical. At this season of the year, as in any other time of the year, there's mail that comes in the mailbox. And sometimes it's good if mom or dad filters through the mail before it gets to the children's hands. Because sometimes there's advertisements that come from certain places that can provoke wrong viewing habits. And let's just say it as it is. Not all that stuff needs to stay on in the island in the kitchen or at the place where everybody's going to see it and page through it. It's just one little thing. But it might make the difference in somebody's purity standards or struggles later in the day or later in the week. Just think about it. Did you see what it says? I will set no wicked thing before mine eyes. I hate the work of them that turn aside. It shall not cleave to me. And the longer we watch it and the more we observe it and the more time we spend with it, the more effect it has upon us. And that's why the addictions of pornography and such like things are so gripping. Mine eyes shall be upon the faithful of the land, that they may dwell with thee. He that walketh in a perfect way, he shall serve me. There are useful things. And most of us who have a device have it for a reason. Talk about a little bit more about that, hopefully. He that worketh deceit shall not dwell within my house. Most of the people that perform on screens, many of them are hypocrites. They're actors, okay? That's all. They're paid to act. They're hypocrites, and that's what a hypocrite is, an actor. And that can get so close to us, can it? He that telleth lies shall not tarry in my sight. Whether that's politicians or whoever it is. Another question, moving on with our subject now this evening. Manoah asked the angel, before Samson was born, how shall we order the child and how shall we do unto him? How shall we order the child? The effects of technology and materialism on our home life. This evening, just give a few illustrations. One morning, I think it was around time of my wife's birthday, if I recall correctly, and so sometimes we do something a little bit different on that day, and oftentimes it includes either some type of brunch or something away from home. So this one specific day, we went up the road to a restaurant, and I saw about a 10-year-old boy about the age of one of the fellas sitting on that second bench right there. And he appeared to be grandparents. And I shall tell you that he might have eaten a bite or two or so of his food. But he had a screen in front of him and he was gaming the whole time that his grandparents or whoever brought him was. He was gaming the whole time through. Seriously. He didn't even, he, like I said, might have eaten two or three bites of, he might have gotten a little drink. But do you know that gaming controls children in our generation to the point where they basically starve themselves? And so one fella told me already 25 years ago, even before I was married, he told me, he said, Virgil, the day's going to come in America whenever a dad's going to rattle a 16-year-old boy and say, son, it's time to get to work. And he's going to say, was that a jump or a run or what was that? And as because the mind is so programmed into gaming. Another little illustration, a 6 or 7 year old fella I saw at an auction. Now, if you guys go to an auction with your dad, you younger boys, I'm talking about younger ones, you're going to, hey, dad, we ought to buy that. You're going to walk over here. Hey, dad, look at this over here. Did you see this? Well, dad probably saw it already. But, yeah, you're going to be looking. And I tell you, we was at this auction, and this little boy was just like this. And his dad was walking him, I guess it was his dad, was holding his head like this and walking among the lawnmowers and the four-wheelers and stuff that was for sale. And he would, he wasn't even looking at anything besides this little. Walking him around. He has no idea what the real world is. No idea what the real world is. And I don't need to tell you what they see on the screens of the television. The whole entertainment is part of the devil's plan to control people and to control the way they act and the way they think. Even when there is great poverty, there are still plenty who have TVs, cell phones, and video games. In places where they don't have electricity in their house. Maybe even have a dirt floor, but they do have this stuff. They do have big screen TVs. Or even a little screen. It doesn't make any difference. It's just as addicting. This is a secular writing. Our addiction to smartphones is damaging American mental health, said such and such an author. Today's phones are so powerful, fast, and filled with dazzling images and alluring tidbits of information from social media and the internet that they are virtually impossible to resist. This is secular writing. This isn't any Christian contender stuff here. Who among us hasn't looked up at least once, smartphone in hand, slightly dazed, only to discover that precious bundles of minutes or hours have somehow slithered by, lost to all eternity, usually in exchange for no discernible enlightenment at all? The average smartphone user checks in about 80 times a day. Click on one Facebook or Instagram feed or web link, and down you go into the digital rabbit hole. Americans now eat, sleep, and breathe media, consuming more, some form of it, 12 hours a day. Not surprisingly, scientific research has linked smartphone use to decreased concentration, lower problem-solving skills, and depression. For youngsters, smartphone addiction is truly disastrous, with the incidence of depressive episodes soaring by 60%. Why give children under 12 what for them is a very expensive portable internet porn finder, social media stalking system, mean girls text corner? Adults should limit their children's smartphone minutes and their own. Our collective mental health may depend on it. And whenever I work with a guy on the fire company in our shop, and we have a scanner that runs just about continuously covering Berks, Lancaster, and Lebanon County. And I will tell you that tomorrow morning, if I'm there, I will, throughout the course of the day, in the hours that I'm at work, I will hear at least 3 calls for emotional problems. Some say stage in the area, which means stay there until the police get there because such and such is running around with a knife. It's 15-year-olds. It's older people. It's any age imaginable. they're mixed up in their head because of what I just read. And now, the city of Altoona, just a few weeks ago, somebody that's in Bible Discoveries and one of the church people in that community has contact with, taking their child to school. A dad taking their child down the street to school. And they were attacked by some teenage girls, believe it or not, just come hailing out of anywhere and tackled them both. And the man was soon found that he was underneath some girls that were just, who learns to do such stupid stuff? It's just because of what I read to you. It controls the mind. And it's happened in that one case I heard about where a young boy, went out to wherever he went, found one of the people that he knew, and clobbered him over the head with a bat. And he said, well, he died. He died. He killed him right there, dead cold, dead. And he said, well, he didn't raise his hand like the guy did in the movie. Because it's a make-believe world, and they live there. They live there day by day and hour by hour. Suicide attempts. Attempted suicide. Down at the high school. Come down, 14-year-old such and such. Attempted suicide. Come to the office. Come to the nurse's station. This stuff happens every day of the week. Somewhere. Somewhere near you, perhaps. And why? It's entertainment, and yet it makes people sad and lonely, isolated. It is time we analyze the impact of electronic devices on ourselves and on our children. It seems that in our world, fascinating entertainment options, and I quote, have them, little children, hooked almost as soon as they can focus their eyes. A question to consider is what if technology itself turns out to be bad for us and for our children? Have you ever thought about it? Rising numbers of children lack the motor skills needed to play with building blocks because of an addiction to tablet computers and smartphones, according to teachers. Many children aged just 3 or 4 can swipe a screen but have little or no dexterity in their fingers after spending hours glued to iPads. How many of you children, little children, haven't played with blocks on the floor? And you stack them blocks up one by one by one, and then you get that stack up there a certain point, and then you try to put that top block on there. Do you know that there's children in a house near you that can't even do it? And you wonder if it's going to fall or if it's not, and you hope little brother doesn't come along and knock my tower over. And you set that block up there. Did you ever play them kind of games? Yes, you obviously have. And what about moving those toys around on the floor? Some children don't know how to do that because they just on the screen. Members of the Association of Teachers and Lecturers also warned how some older children were unable to complete traditional pen and paper exams because their memory has been eroded by overexposure to screen-based technology. They called on parents to crack down on computer use and even turn off Wi-Fi at night to address the problem. I've seen a devastating impact on children over the last 20 years. Technology attacks the foundation necessary for healthy development. When I was a child, our neighborhood was safe, and I played outside every day with my friends. We used our creativity and imagination, enhanced our problem-solving skills, and developed healthy bodies. By the time my son was growing up, I rarely saw neighborhood children playing outside. The trend had shifted, and the outdoors was perceived to be unsafe. The outdoors is unsafe, but video games are safe, entertainment's safe, and oftentimes it's substituted for parental time. In other words, if you give your child a device, they will be entertained, believe it or not. And you won't have to bother with them too much. You might not even have to feed them. And some children actually almost die or basically starve themselves. I already said that. Don't want to be too redundant tonight. But it has happened. And it does happen because the mind is so engrossed, they don't think about some of the very basic necessities of human life. And they don't care about it either. It just programs them to think differently. We know that physical health is affected by screen time, especially eyesight, hearing, and weight. Did you ever think about it, why some people are so obese these days? Some of it's attributed to the same reason. Just for maybe a sideline here, the other day a call came through on the scanner that somebody 500 pounds walked out on their deck and the deck boards didn't hold them. They called in, I'm not sure how many people with sawzalls and stuff, try to lift a 500-pound person out of the deck that they crashed through. Think about it. How does that happen? Obesity. Addicted to screen time. And some people are just gorging themselves, and physical exercise amounts next thing to nothing. In my conflict resolution work in school, I did sometimes speak with teens who do not know who they are, what is real about themselves and what is a mask. They have spent their growing years, several different personas or avatars in various imagery worlds. And if they can make these false fronts more glamorous and bold than mere human can hope to be, we should not be surprised that they come to hate themselves. This leads to depression, desperation, and in all too many cases, suicide. How many people, movie stars, famous people, age 30, die, suicide. Again and again and again and again and again, it happens all over the place. On many levels, addiction to video games is as dangerous as drug or alcohol abuse. It can lead children compulsively into ever darker worlds with no easy way back. It's no surprise why so many school shootings have been carried out by avid gamers. They seem unable to differentiate between violent games and the consequences of murder in the real world. And we react with shock to hear about child soldiers commandeered into third world country armies, but it's even harder to see the young militias growing in our own homes manipulated just as cruelly by more distant counterparts. Think about it. And some of this I realize might be a little heavier language than what we're used to talking most of the time, but it's still true. And it's happening somewhere near you. Notice that the outdoors is deemed to be unsafe. And if anything made it worse, it was COVID lockdowns, because people were confined in some of the cities. Driving, coming out of New York City last October, was riding in the Pilgrim coach with my wife. I said, look at that over there. A huge apartment building. I said, which one of them houses do you want to live in? The back porch is this, what is it, about a 10-foot by 6-foot little porch that protrudes out, hanging over space. That's their backyard. Which one do you want to live in? But let me tell you, the screens inside the house are alive and well. And in COVID lockdowns, multitudes of people are spending their time there. You better believe it. So if you got children, you can still put a little block on top of that stack and put it there. You got a blessing. Some people don't. If you have a boy that can take that little tractor, whatever color daddy prefers, that he happens to have on the floor, and learns how to back that tractor and wagon, take it as a blessing. If you got a boy that likes to tear an engine apart, you got a girl that likes to get up beside mama and make them cookies, go for it, folks. That's what life's about. It's not about gaming. It's not about glued to the screen. It's about real life. If you had got a child that goes and gets you that bouquet of flowers, some moms in this world have no clue what it is. Some don't. Study habits. I got a question for you. Just because Google says so, is it true? Is it true? Do we still know how to look up a word in a dictionary? Do we still know what an encyclopedia really is? Or is it all Wikipedia now, online? How is it? There is no easy way to relieve the burden that technology places on children and on ourselves. There's no easy way. It is time for us to take a hard look at the clever devices in our own lives that everyone calls time savers when we are sitting texting on a playground bench while our children play alone. Whose time are we saving? When we send one more email, read one more article, play one more round of a game while the children are in the vicinity, we're telling them that something else is more important than they are. We can talk about children's technological addictions all we want, but the problem starts closer to home. Let's put our smartphones away and tune in to the living, breathing wonders that are waiting for us. Look up and notice them. Let's shut off the power and take our child by the hand and show them that the real world is a fascinating place. Go visit someplace. Take a walk in a state park. Walk down a trail somewhere. See what the real world is. Spend time with those children. And how many times don't you see that? Just go to the park. Sometimes because of a lack of playthings in our yard, I go to the park with our daughter and spend some Sunday afternoons there. And again you see it. The children are over there swinging, and dad has no time to push them. Mom doesn't either. And sometimes the children want to do something. They actually want to do something real, like you children want to do. But mom and dad have no time for them. They're still... I guess you've seen me do that enough now to know what I mean. So is there time whenever the cell phone doesn't need to be answered? One missionary family of ours in Honduras told me that they, at their house, they put the phones away at mealtime. At least that's one time. Grandpa might have died while we're eating supper, but at least the phone's over there. This is family time right now. Sit down to eat, phone's put away. That's at least one idea. Family worship time. You know, it might be a pretty important call, but do we have to answer it when we're in the middle of reading a Bible story? When we're in the middle of singing a song? Those are types of things that... And what about our personal time with God? Sometimes it's just good for me to take this device, put it on vibrate, put it on something where I scarcely would hear it, and then go over there and pray for a while so I don't not get disrupted with this thing. Because I found out already that I have it in my pocket all the time. Oh, what was that again? Did you ever have that problem? Maybe no one knows what I'm talking about. But I'm pretty convinced tonight, folks, that that sometimes our devices are stealing our time with God and our devotional life are digging into and carving away at and caving away. It's like having a nice built house here, but there's something washing away underneath and eroding the foundation. And it's very possible tonight that technology is doing it to us because of exactly what I'm talking about, because it's eroding our time with God and our personal devotional life. And if we don't have it, we don't have it. Another area of great importance that affects us all is that a lot of commercialization and materialism is affecting us. And this is the other part of the message. In a world that is so hostile toward children, and makes it so impossible for them on one hand to live and exist, with the abortion we talked about this morning, plus all this other stuff, as soon as they have money to spend, the world wants them with open arms. I mean, get a credit card. I mean, get Black Friday deals are on. I mean, get them. You got to get out there. I mean, get shopping, folks. I mean, you got to get out there to Cabela's and spend the night there. Tailgate parties overnight so you can hit the good deals when they open the doors at such and such a time. There's Mennonite people that do that to get the best deals at Cabela's. Seriously. Do we need it? What exactly is the exact piece of hunting gear that we have to have, and we have to have it at 6 o'clock whenever the doorbuster deals are on at Cabela's? I mean, seriously? Is it that important? And you can go down at the neighbor man's garage sale or the man's cave sale that's down yard sale and get the thing for about how much less money again? You might have never even used it, might not even got it out of the box. You might find it for a fraction of the price. Maybe I was raised with not enough money or something. I don't know. I don't figure some of that stuff out. But our children, when they have money to spend, the world receives them with open arms. Not only that, but they try to get as much of the parents' money so these children can be raised just right. I mean, to raise your children, folks, you gotta have this, and 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 you gotta have that. And there are needs. But the world tells us we need a lot of stuff that we don't really need to raise a godly family. There's some stuff we can plain down do without. How much do we as parents cater to our children's wish list? It's nice to get them a birthday gift. It might be even okay to get them something for Christmas. But how much do we spend to buy things that our children have to have to be happy? And sometimes the more they have, the less happy they are. Did you ever see that? Not quite sure how to give this illustration or how to present what I want to say. But just think about our world's concepts of family size versus the earnings. So just one illustration, a boy turned 1 year old. And they invited friends from far and from wide, and since they're our next door neighbors, we happened to be invited too. But I tell you, this family was heroic enough to have a boy, and he got 1 year old. I mean, he made it all the way to 1 year. And we had to invite everybody in, and you know what? Everybody brought a gift. And I'm not talking about just a little thing. I'm talking about stuff that filled a tabletop, underneath the table, all around the table. The guy could have been opening gifts for the next week. Maybe two or three a day. And who got that? A one-year-old boy. Okay? Think about it. I was thinking about another family. They had three children. They're the only grandchildren that such and such has. And I'm telling you, and it's a money family, and the gifts that are passed around at Christmas time and at birthday time. I'm telling you, folks, it just about blows your mind. If God's blessed you with a large family and a family that loves each other, some of them gifts can be kept a lot smaller and say just as much. We don't need to just dump gifts on to make a child happy. What they need is our time and our love and our prayers. There's needs, yes. Understand me. There are needs. But what happens is psychiatrists, daycare center specialists, behavior therapy specialists, psychiatrists and psychologists, medical doctors, and behavior-altering drugs need to be put in place to compensate for loving homes, for unified marriages, for freedom from violent and occultism. They somehow need to put all this other stuff in place and support those industries to replace or to supplement a loving home. Would I surprise you tonight by telling you that U.S. has 5% of the world's population? And 85% of the Ritalin in the world, 85% of the Ritalin in the world is consumed in U.S. of A. And it's for the very reason that I'm speaking to tonight. That's why I've heard it said that some of the children that come to certain of our Bible discoveries classes are like zoned out. Like, they're there, but they're not there because they're so dulled by drugs. And what do they live with at home anyway? The rest is left to the imagination. And they're entertained. Many times when those movies start on the plane, and I've ridden plane often enough to know, there's what they call parental advisory. In other words, this thing's going to have some stuff in it that your little one shouldn't be seeing. And I see it again and again. They just swipe right over it and keep right on moving and watch it. And let the children watch it. Is that somebody you? In this thing we're talking about, a man brought his troubled son to see a doctor. His son was having trouble, and he brought him to a psychiatrist. Sir, what do I do with this boy of mine? The doctor looked at the boy and talked to the boy for a while, talked to the dad for a while, dismissed the dad and talked to the boy for a while. His dad came back in and said, "What is your analysis?" He said, "Young man, I'm going to tell you something. This little boy right here needs 5 minutes of your time every day. That's what he needs. 5 minutes. So if you have six children tonight, how many minutes is it? 5 times 6, 30 minutes. 5 minutes a day. The dad says, "I don't have 5 minutes to give this boy. I want you to give him meds." Is that somebody you? I hope not. Is it your neighbor? Possibly. It's the world we live in. 5 minutes a day. I'm going to give this illustration because this happened really close to home. There was a troubled young man, came to our house one evening, invited him for supper. And I got home from work, and some of the boys, my boys, got home from work at the same time. And since I knew that it was, and I tell this story not to lift anybody up, but just to illustrate a point. Keep me out of it, but I asked, "So, son, how did it go at work today? How did it go at school for you?" Just one, two, three, just a couple quick questions. And then we all went into the house to eat supper. After supper was over, I told the family, "I'm going to be visiting with so-and-so this evening." And the young man just simply said this. He said, "What you did with those boys, your boys out there at the end of the walk tonight," he said, "I knew nothing of that at the house where I live." Five minutes a day. Do they know that you care? You might be miles and miles from home. Preaching assignment, brothers. It's okay to call back and talk to the little one if he's able to talk. It's okay to text the young man, "How did work go today anyhow? How did it go for school? Mom's phone," just talk to him. Stay in contact with him. You're on a business trip. You can keep contact with home. A couple minutes. They know that dad, although he's miles away, mom might be helping maybe funeral or something, takes my wife away sometimes or some other issue with family things, takes her distances from home. But we always know that mom's heart's at home. She checks in with about every one of the children, whether they live in Belize or Oregon, 5 minutes a day. And your children know if you have time or if you don't. Because if they don't, they're sitting there and they're gaming. They're sitting there and they're wondering what about. There's fear, there's insecurity, there's identity issues, there's immorality. There's all kinds of evil friends that come around and want to try things. Drug world, pleasure of this world. I'm serious, it just gets terrible. And a lot of that can be helped with a couple minutes a day. They know mom and dad still care. They know that mom and dad love them. We were with a family right out exactly a year ago, a family that grew up in our setting. And some of the parents decided, grandparents decided, you know what, some of this stuff we're going to put aside. So they went to a more liberal church, a more permissive church. We all know who it is. And it's just let that to the one side. But this family said, "We don't like to go back to my parents' place anymore." Because the grandchildren, although they're all Mennonites like we are, now grandma and grandpa have a big flat screen and the children sit in there while us adults are out in the living room visiting and they're watching and watching and watching. And what are they watching? This stuff gets really close home. What are they watching? They're watching a bunch of actors. And after a while, they learn to become like them too. We must be careful, folks. And I speak to myself as I speak to you. The worst disease in our world today, a quotable quote, that the worst disease in our world today is not tuberculosis or leprosy. It is the poverty that is born of a lack of love. Investing in time spent with your children is more important than investing in your bank account. I read that this morning. We know that it is impossible to live without money and material goods. We need to make plans for our future. But ultimately, it is the love we give our children and not the material things that will remain with them for life. Ultimately, it is the love we give our children and not the material things that will remain with them for life. As we ponder the question, how shall we order the child and how shall we do unto him? I trust that we can be challenged and encouraged in that which is good and biblical, even in 2023, until we leave this earth. How much is our household spending on communication as opposed to 20 years ago? Think about it. What are you spending for a communication now? Some of you that are older, that you didn't spend 20 years ago and didn't need 20 years ago. Another question. Is it a want or a need? Is it a wish list thing or is it a need? Can we divide, rightly divide that? Is it a tool or is it a toy? Is it a tool or is it a toy? There's a couple things in life, and I wish I had a medicine bottle here, but there's a couple things in life that we need to have something pretty clear about. And if I had a bottle of Vicks or something, aspirin or ibuprofen over here, that would add to the illustration. Use technology, use money. A lot can be said about the Christian relating to this stuff here too. Use medicine with a definite purpose and a limited dose. Why do you take ibuprofen or Advil or whatever your pill of choice might be? Why? You take it for a specific reason. And you take it in a limited dose. This thing here, a definite reason and a limited dose. And this thing here, a definite reason and a limited dose. Do we have a standard at our house about this type of stuff? How are our study habits? How are our children's social skills? They can text till the cows come home, like we use the expression, children of our world, but they cannot look at you in the face and say, good morning, how are you doing today? They don't know how. Your children, as little as little Kendrick here, knows how to give his right hand to say hi to you. Some of you children know that from, you're taught that from little. You look at the older person, grandpa or whoever it is, and you look at them and talk to them. But some children have no idea how to hold a conversation with somebody right there, have no idea. But they can text like everything. And it, social skills, work ethic. This is one that we got to keep alive. As our agrarian lifestyle seems to be changing some, do they still know how to work? Do they still know how to sweat sometimes? Or is it all AC? Is it all climate controlled? Sometimes the bigger business militates against outreach and brotherhood sharing. Sometimes it does. Do our children know how to play with toys? Do they know how to tear an engine apart? It might be just a, might be a nuisance out there in that shop, but they're learning something. Do they get into that cookbook and want to make a recipe at a certain age? Try something. They might make a spill in the kitchen. Yeah, they might, but they're learning. And you'd sooner have them on doing that than doing some things some other children do in our world. Thinking something through. Do we always have to Google it, or is there a way we can figure it out? Yeah, YouTube's handy sometimes to figure out how to change a water pump in that Duramax if you're in the West, like one of my boys had to do one time. On the way out there in the truck, the water pump went bad and he didn't know how to do it. I said, son, just go in there and figure it out. And after a while, the water pump was changed. There's a tool then, right? It's okay then, right? Maybe, if Dad says so. Play games in the yard. Play games on the floor or the tabletop. Encourage interaction. It doesn't have to all be done on the screen. I think our standard actually says something about that. It encourages interaction with others and teaches lessons of winning and losing. Even teaches lessons on honesty. Do you ever have a little question whether that we jumped the right number of spaces in that, what's it called, sorry game? We lose sometimes in the games. What are our attitudes? It says a lot, but it's interaction with family, right? Can children play with toys and can they read books? I'm blessed when I walk into homes and see a little stack of books there. We don't have to read it all off the screen. I think I've said enough and hopefully given enough illustrations with maybe not too many, but I've said what I need to say this evening. May God add his blessing and blessings to you at the congregation in Lakeview, and thanks for your kind hospitality toward us this weekend. May God be with you until we meet again.